everyone, Rob and Jerry are back yet again with another Combos of Christmas.
Hey guys, what's up?
And we have two that we're going to bring today, and the reason we're doing two instead of one is because, well, these decks are very similar in what they do to win. Jerry, what are the two decks we're going to be talking about today?
We're going to be talking about Copycat and Twinless Twin.
Boy, so Copycat was not just a modern deck, but also a very brief standard deck until they realized how atrocious the combo actually was and immediately banned it. But of course, we get to keep it in modern. And then Twinless Twin is what it sounds like, the old Splinter Twin combo, but without the Splinter Twin enchantment. Instead, we rely on Kiki Jiki, but we'll get more into those here in a bit. So Copycat and Twinless Twin, we've already explained how they got their names. Jerry, let's just talk about one at a time.
We'll go ahead and start with Twinless Twin.
Excellent.
So obviously it's named after the missing piece of the original version of the deck, Splinter Twin, the red and two enchantment, where the enchanted creature gets to tap, make a token copy of itself. That creature gains haste, and you'd stick that on any creature with an enter the battlefield untap a creature ability. So like a Deceiver Exarch, whenever it's a blue and a two with flash for a 1/4. Whenever it enters the battlefield, you may tap or untap a permanent. So you would untap the Deceiver Exarch, to tap the Deceiver Exarch, to make a new Deceiver Exarch, to untap the Deceiver Exarch, infinite Deceiver Exarchs, and they all have haste. That was the primary way to win. Wizards of the Coast had deemed this to be too powerful. Reasons being is that it was just a simple two-card combo of play a thing at the end of your turn, play my thing on my turn. And there were many different versions of the deck. The deck could play green for Tarmogoyfs and Bounding Crassus, which is another creature that went infinite with it. The deck could go and play black cards along with it, such as Gurmag Angler, Tassiger the Golden Fang, or Thought Seizes to interact with their hand. There was a white version of the deck, the Jeskai version, where they would play copies of Restoration Angel, Wall of Omens, and Kiki Jiki. So not only did you have the traditional twin on a Deceiver Exarch, but you could also Kiki Jiki Deceiver Exarch or Kiki Jiki Restoration Angel. The other thing they noticed was it wasn't that it was ever overtly dominating the format, but it was always one of the top tier decks. The best players played the deck, whereas everyone else kind of didn't, but the best players were always playing this deck, and it was always overperforming at the Pro Tour Grand Prix level, despite it might not being the best deck in the room.
Yeah, it was. I remember when I got into Modern initially, Twin was still around, and it was considered the police of the format. It was the ultimate turn four combo because, right, on turn three, generally you're going to be getting tapped. Something's going to get tapped on your end thanks to Deceiver Exarch and or the other one, Pester Mite. And then on the following turn, right, here comes Splinter Twin, and you just lose if you don't have an answer for it.
Yep. This deck was the original, like, back in the wild, wild west of Modern. This was the litmus of Modern will be a turn four format. This was that deck that really dictated that. And boy, how the tables have turned on that. Modern is no longer a turn four format. I can promise you that.
Yeah, we're looking more was turn three, three and a half.
Yeah, like, it's definitely more of a turn three format now. But back in the day when, you know, you had your Cloud Post, your goofy Blazing Shoal Infect lists, your Rite of Flame Storms, the really obnoxious broken stuff, this deck was like, it was still good in that format, but in no way was it the best. And it ended up sticking around. In any different format for a while, it would, you know, like say when Summer Bloom was figured out, and Summer Bloom Titan was like the best thing, but Twin was always alongside it. Or when Jund got new pieces, such as Abrupt Decay. Even though Abrupt Decay is like super good against the deck, we still played Twin. It was still good enough. So enough about the history. Why are we playing this deck now? You know, why are we playing a conditionally worse version of the deck? The answer to that is because of the card quality we've received in the last few years. Specific cards I want to talk about in that card quality are your Crackling Drake, your Archmage's Charm, and your River Glide Pathway. The Crackling Drake is, we saw that back in the Phoenix format. Like, this card is like the pinnacle of what a 4-drop should do in Modern. And people have now been saying this is just a bad Omnath. Yeah, it is a bad Omnath, but you know what? It still flies, and it still hits for a ton of damage.
Yeah, it does.
For those who are unfamiliar, blue-blue, red-red, creature Drake, flying. Its power and toughness are equal to the total number of instants and sorceries in your own exile and in your graveyard. So it doesn't matter where they're at. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. A lot of games are actually won on this card because they're so scared of getting murdered by the twin combo that you wind up winning games on the back of Crackling Drake and Snapcaster Bolt, Lightning Bolt Snapcaster. That's a real thing. The other cards I mentioned, the Archmage's Charm. Blue, 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 instant. Choose one, counter target spell. Target player draws two cards. Gain control of target non-land permanent converted mana, cost one or less. Super strong modal spell, slightly overcosted, but because of all the modes, they're relevant and they're what you want. And then the newest two pieces to the deck are both a land and a spell land, and you know my love of these spell lands.
Oh, definitely.
Valakut Awakening. Two in a red, instant. Put any number of cards from your hand on the bottom of your library. Then draw that many, plus one. This allows you to end a turn, just search for the combo. Or search for, like, say, because you draw, like, a bunch of chaff, your opponent's not doing anything. Oh, we're just going to Awakening all this and draw a kill hand. And it happens a lot more than it should. And then Riverglide Pathway is the final quality of life piece that the deck really needed. It's a new modal land where it's blue on the front and it produces red on the back. The key with the deck in the lands that it was just given is that it is very hard to run Cryptic Command, Archmage's Charm, and Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker all in the same shell on a fetch shock basics mana base. So what they ended up doing is now with all this, with this critical mass of lands that produce blue and red, we now are able to consistently cast all of these spells in this deck without worrying about hitting too many basics.
And what's interesting thing I want to note here is, like you said, the previous one with the fetch shocks and the basics, this is fetchless.
Yes, it can't play fetches. That's why the deck never succeeded before. The player named Timu, he does a little bit of streaming of his own and plays. He's been playing this deck on the regular through leagues, and he's been tearing it up. Like, clearly this deck has something going for it. It is a very strong list. It plays all the strong cards that have been printed recently in the archetype, and it still plays some of the old holdovers that are still very good. And figuring out the mana was the hardest part. And then I think once he realized, you know what, just get rid of the fetch shock basic mana base and just play this dedicated Spire Bluff Canal, Riverglide Pathway, Reflecting Pool, Cascade Bluffs mana base, he never misses. He never misses on mana. That is the best part about this deck. In the sideboard, your options here are, I mean, it's you get your typical blue suspects in this day and age with Aether Gust and Mystical Dispute. And now in red, Cleansing Wildfire is a must play. Being able to blow up a land at 2 mana and then draw a card for it. And sometimes, actually a lot of the time, depending on the matchup, sometimes they just don't get the land. So it's a 2 mana Stone Rain that draws you a card.
Which is just fantastic.
Because this deck runs such a bare bones minimum amount of islands, 2 boils are actually played. This is a dedicated blue deck that plays boil. Another way that just wins you the game on the spot. Obviously, you're playing boil to beat other Cryptic Command lists, but you're also boiling away Dryad of the Elysian Grove decks. When they have the Dryad out, all their lands are islands. Boil them away.
Yep. Now, when it comes to mulliganing this deck, like, can we keep pretty like loose hands, if you will? Because it seems like I got a good amount of tempo, a good amount of card draw here, some nice reactive cards. It's a well-rounded spell base. Do I need to have my combo in hand, or is this more of a tempo kind of hang back and then win out of nowhere?
You're going to tempo, hang back, and win when you deplete your opponent on resources. This deck is very good at out-resourcing an opponent. A couple things I've learned while playing the list. If they're playing around the Archmage's Charm, just end of turn, draw 2 cards, and bury them in card advantage. You know, there's more value in that than there should be. If they're playing around that, if they're a control deck and they just don't have anything going for them, don't be afraid to throw bolts at their face and snap in a bolt. Providing a 2-mana clock, or a 2-power clock on them is sometimes good enough because they can never safely tap out. Yep. Because they run the risk of dying. The other thing that this has going for it is that Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker, unlike Splinter Twin, can't be Force of Negated. which is like the biggest, like, oh my gosh, we just realized this. And Kiki Jiki can also copy other creatures. Like, even if you don't have the Deceiver, if you copy a Crackling Drake, you usually win the game. Just on the spot. Just copy Crackling Drake, draw a card, Crackling Drake's hit for 16, they're dead.
Yep.
It happens way more than it should because people are going to fetch and shock against you. Yeah, you're a slow, control, mid-range-ish deck.
Yeah, and they're going to be a little bit more aggressive, a little more loose with their life total. And just like you were saying earlier, too, like, I mean, a Bolt Snap Bolt is a very, very rough hit.
Yes, it's 6 damage, possible 8 to 10 on 4 mana and 2 cards. Like, that's obviously, that's, many games have been won on that plan. And with this deck, they continue to be won that way.
Where would you put this deck on? And again, this is only Twinless Twin. We're going to be talking about Copycat here in a minute. Where do you put this deck on the difficulty scale?
This is a 10. This is easy. This is a hard. This is something I would not go into if I did not know how to play Magic. Because you don't know. Like, sometimes you're a control deck, and sometimes you're aiming for a combo. And you need to understand what your opponent's doing in order for you to be able to effectively play against them.
Right, and that goes into the whole knowing your role, and that's something we talked about a few years ago too, early on in our podcast, was are you the control player or are you the aggressor in the match? Because there's always one that is sided one way or the other, whether you know it or not.
Like, by turn two, you should figure out, is this Snapcaster Mage going to do anything for me? I'm just going to slam this Ambush Viper and hit you every turn. That is a real play, and it's a lot of play. You know, it's one of those little things that you miss, and that damage adds up. Some people miss that. There's a lot of little things in here that you just miss because of how you played versus how your opponent played.
Yep. All right. Well, that's Twinless Twin. Now let's head over to Copycat, because we're kind of doing the same thing here. We're making multiple copies of a creature, and we're using that to kill. But how is this one different?
This one uses a Planeswalker and a creature. It uses Saheeli Rai. She's one, a red and a blue, comes into play with 3 loyalty. I'm only going to talk about her middle ability here for time's sake. Her middle ability is one that matters because it's the one that does the thing. -2, create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. That token gains haste, exile it at the beginning of next end step. And you're going to use that, targeting your Felidar Guardian 99% of the time to win the game. When it enters the battlefield, you may exile another permanent you control, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. So you'll play the Felidar Guardian, exile the Saheeli. Saheeli target Felidar Guardian, get a new token, exile Saheeli, rinse and repeat, infinite 1/4 hasty cats.
Yep, and this was a printed standard combo. Not just that, it was also a printed block combo too.
See, at least with Splinter Twin and Deceiver Exarch were in the same standard together. They were not in the same block together. These two were in the same block together.
Yeah, so you could draft this.
This was if you drafted this, you were just winning. Like, Saheeli Rai in your first pack, you snapped that. Now, you're like, all right, we're in.
Now, the one thing, though, like, with this show is you can kind of put this in almost any deck, I would say, that's running Jeskai. You can throw in these 8 cards and go to town with it. And right now, actually, the big deck that's running it is 4-color Omnath.
Yes, this is the best shell for it by far and away, because you're using the greatest threats in the modern era of Magic. Every single card here has to be answered or you're going to run away with the game. Omnath, Uro, Saheeli, Teferi, Renin 6, Felidar Guardian. These cards all do a bunch, and they all run over people relatively fast. There are some versions of the deck where they loosen up on the spells, and they keep the Uro, Omnath, 27-28 land, Field of the Dead thing to give you that extra angle of attack. Just depends on what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Now, if you're looking for budget between the two, I would definitely go with the Twinless Twin and not so much the Copycat. Copycat, this one here, the 4-color Omnath, you're looking at about $1,000 to $1,200. When it comes to Twinless Twin, you're looking at $500.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh. Every card in this deck's expensive. Key interactions to note here is that Felidar Guardian can reset Teferi Time Raveler. Felidar Guardian bounces lands, triggering Field of the Deads in the non-Utopia Sprawl versions, and it bounces lands, triggering Omnath additional times. You can also bounce Omnath to draw a card. If you bounce your Uro with the Felidar Guardian, the Uro gets sacrificed. keep that in mind.
Yep. Because it is.
Why you do. I haven't found a situation where it's necessary, but it can come up. Maybe you want it in your yard for some reason. Maybe you're trying to look and draw more cards. Maybe you have the ability to, like, say you have an excess of mana and a limit of plays because you have no cards in your hand. You, like, Felidar Guardian, blink your Uro, Uro dies, pay four, do the escape it, do the thing again. Like, I could see that being a line there.
Yeah, something where you need to gain life kind of quickly.
Most successful versions of this deck are currently just doing the Utopia Sprawl thing. One green mana enchantment, Enchant a Forest. Comes into play, choose a color. When Enchanted Forest is tapped for mana, its controller adds one mana of the chosen color to their pool. Usually the lines I see with this deck, the best ones are like turn one Sprawl, turn two Teferi, turn three Saheeli, turn four Cat, game over.
Yep, it is a very fast deck.
And it is a companion deck. You get to play Gigantha the Wellspring, and not only is Gigantha like relevant, like Gigantha pays for Omnath. Just gee whiz, like I'm gonna tap this Gigantha and play this Omnath because I can.
Yeah, and you just end up floating the black, which nothing in your deck really utilizes black that I can see initially. Nope,
it's a sideboard, like a typical sideboard piece, like a Surgical Extraction or something. But that's just a play in and of itself. The fact that you get this 5-mana 5/5 that can generate some non-zero number of mana for, I mean, and then it just pays you, like, it pays for your Omnath, which is insane, and it pays half of your Uro, which is good enough.
Absolutely. So, no, all in all, I mean, it's a really good deck, performing very well. Now, Jerry, you said Twinless Twin was a very difficult deck. What about this one now? What if we wanted, like, we had the ability to play this deck, where would this one go on the scale? You think this is a little bit easier?
Yes, I do, actually, despite all the colors. This is an easy... This isn't, like... Twinless Twin is, like, a 9-10. This is more like a 5-6. Yeah, there's understanding the combo, but there's also just playing your deck. This deck does just play the threats. Ren and Six, Omnath, and Uro do just win games on their own. So there's... That'll happen. And the sideboard itself is... all really self-explanatory stuff. We're talking Mystical Dispute for blue cards, Celestial Purge for black and red cards, Cleansing Wildfire for decks where lands matter cards, Dovin's Veto to stop specific spells, Deafening Clarion if your opponent's trying to go wide, you know, Soul Guide Lantern, you're a graveyard deck. The sideboard is like, there's no protecting yourself of your combo here. Your combo is just incidental, and the sideboard pieces are the best pieces you get in the colors available because it's a 4 or 5 color list.
Gotcha. And then how safe of an investment do you think either of these decks are?
Twinless Twin, safe investment. Omnath Uro, no, not a safe investment.
Yeah, well, what's your concern with this list?
I could see both Uro and Omnath getting banned at some point in the modern.
Okay.
I could even see Ren and Six getting banned at some point. That one a little less so than Uro, which is a little less so than Omnath, which is a little less so than Uro. Like, Uro has found its way into every non-vintage format that it can play in, so I could definitely see Uro just getting banned all the way down into Legacy.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it before, and the things that I would say you want to look at is not just the number one deck, but how many decks are actually piloting Uro right now in Modern. And there are some websites that can give some good ideas on that, that being the Modern Metagame from MTG Goldfish. You also have MTG Top 8, which can give you, like, the top played cards. And you can see here, yeah, it's Lightning Bolt, then a whole bunch of lands. But if you dive a little bit deeper, you can start to see, okay, what's the most played creature? What's the percentage of it? And that's when you can really start to see, there it is, Uro behind just lands at 17.9% of top performing decks are running Uros and Ren and Six. Everything else above that are lands, Path to Exile, and Lightning Bolt.
And Uro Ren and Six is a real card advantage engine. So
100%.
100%. You got to watch out for that. And I don't think it's safe from a ban. Field of the Dead is another card in the Field of the Dead non-Utopia Sprawl versions where they take out the Sprawls and slow it down for some fields. And maybe a couple counter magics, who knows. The Field of the Dead's also not like a safe card for Modern, I don't think. Like, it's just making all other, you know, it's making all other decks fall back onto, we should just be playing Field of the Dead if we're trying to play fair.
Okay. You got anything else to add on either of these decks?
No, man. I mean, they're both cool decks. They're both very good. The blue-red deck, the Twinless Twin, is definitely something that is rewarding to the player who knows how to play. And Omnath Uro, again, is with a copycat in it, is one of the more... It's rewarding when you don't really know what you're doing, but you just have all these big must-answer threats.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on this, the third day, right? Fourth day. Jeez, we're blown through these of our 12 combos of Christmas. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Be sure to check us out on all of our social media outlets, that being Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find all of our videos on YouTube as well. Check out our podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, and Spotify. And, of course, check out our partner for this month, Deep Dive Games out of St. Mary's, Georgia. We're currently doing a promo with Deep Dive Games down here in St. Mary's, Georgia, where if you subscribe to our YouTube channel and message us with the screenshot of your subscription, then we'll be sending you a 5% off code to be used one time on any in-store or online purchase. Definitely check them out. They have the latest and greatest when it comes to miniatures, D&D, and, of course, Magic the Gathering. But that's going to do it for us. Y'all have a fantastic day.